Okay. And we had just seen Rabbi Yochanan's response. Amar alei Rabbi Yochanan geneva benefesh tochiach she'en yesh l'bailem v'chayim. So Rabbi Lazar had argued that there's no din of mechira before yesh, because it's not effectual. And it was based upon, and it really came from his statement. The only thing Rabbi Lazar might have, the only thing Rabbi Lazar certainly said, was that stam yeir teida that stam geneva is yeish bailim, because otherwise the Torah would not have said utzvacho mecharo it's chayv dal vehe, because if mecharo, if it wasn't for the assumption that there was stam yeir, she'd be pater, because the mechira is not a mechira, because you can't sell an object before yeish and have the sale be binding, and that's why Rabbi Lazar said that you see that stam geneva is in fact yeish bailim. Now, the Gemara then goes on to describe what about the possibilities. Maybe he didn't have, so Dilma Lo Yayish, that's really sort of part of the original thought. Obviously, it's because you stated that he had Yayish. And maybe it's a case, maybe even if he didn't have Yayish. So the Gemara says, no, it can't be because Tzvicha Mechira, it's Mechira Dumya de Tzvicha. So just as Tzvicha Zahanumasav, Amechira Zahanumasav. It's a very interesting statement, because what does it mean, Tzvicha Dumya de Mechira? I mean, I know what it means, literally. What is that? It looks like a hekesh. It certainly does look like a hekesh. But the Balei HaTosfos debate or dispute whether or not, in fact, that is a hekesh. Because Rabbi Yochanan's question from Geneva Benefesh, it doesn't make any sense if you assume it's a hekesh. Because there's no hekesh between the Mechira of Geneva Benefesh and the Tvicha of Dal Vehe. You know, one is in Parshas Mishpatim, or if you wish, Parshas Kiseitze, and the other one is somewhere else in Parshas Mishpatim. And then separated by, you know, something to the tune of, 20 to 25 psukim, even if they're both in Mishpatim. So, no. The Gonevi Shum Charov and Misavi Adam Osimas, which is a Mishpatim, that's, you know, probably something like, you know, Pasuk Yud Gimel approximately or something like that, and maybe a little later. It's probably Pasuk Yud Dal would be my guess. No, that's too early to be a Dal. Tezayin would be my guess. But anyway, So there's no hekesh between the mechira of a nefesh and the tzvicha of dal v'hei. So what would the Gemara's hava mean? If it meant really a hekesh, if dumya the tzvicha means, you know, hekesh tzvicha the mechira, so then what exactly would be what would be the kash of Rabbi Yochanan? All right. So anyway, Rabbi Yochanan says ganevim nefesh tochiach. I'm sorry. So the Gemara then finally concludes. Maybe it's a case where we heard that he had yeish. So they say that no, it must be dimmi the tzvicha, just as tzvicha is le'altar for mechira is le'altar. And of course, how does one know that mechira? There are two problems with this. First, how do you know that tzvicha is le'altar? And secondly, if mechira is le'altar, what kind of a yeish is it? It's shilamidas, right? In other words, the only way, if you rip his behemoth, you know, if you steal his behemoth, and you immediately, 3 minutes later, sell it, in all probability, he hasn't heard about it yet. So if you want to say that Yesh Shalom Das is called Yesh, that means that even though he has heard about it, because when he hears about it, he will have Yesh, it already counts as Yesh from before. So fine, but we paskin that Yesh Shalom Das is not Kona, like Abaye, it's one of the six cases of the Yal Kagam, that's the Yud. So therefore, how can the altar be the altar? Parenthetically, if you actually look at that sugya, and we're probably going to look at it to some extent, I may give you a bit of reading to do above Mitzia, it's a little difficult because Pashtus in so many Mishnayos is like Rava. And the Gemara, even the Gemara's Kasha, if you look, how many of you learned Eilu Mitzias? I learned Eilu Mitzias, I think, in fifth grade. But I learned it once since. But if you look in that sugya, it's a very unusual, because basically most of the raya's point in Rava's direction, and the Gemara gets to the end. It's not the only raya against Rava, but you know at that point basically everything has been mituratz, and they get to the end and they ask this such a dachuk diuk against Rava, and they say tiufta the Rava tiufta the chasak habayi bi al kagam. Do you look at the sugya? It's It's pilei plaim. It's a very, we're going to talk about it some more, but Tosfos here assumes is davar pashut, we pass like Abaye. The Gemara says we pass like Abaye, therefore yesh lamidas lava yesh. So he says the alta doesn't mean alta, but it means over a short period of time when he's likely to find out, and therefore it's not issued yesh lamidas. And then you don't have to explain it. Why tavach? How you know tvichas the alta? I don't know. Presumably the guy stole it because he wants to eat or something like that, and he shechts it. Yeah, how do you know tvichas the alta? Okay, anyway, so the Gemara says that it's unlikely that we're going to have heard the way Tosfos that he's going to heard about it in the Yeush in the interim, and unless we assume he heard about it, he had Yeush, and therefore it's not and therefore you see that it's Dafka La'achar. You see Reb Lezer holds that it's Dafka La'achar Yeush. One could have suggested, I'll take your question in a second, you know, perhaps the posture in the Gemara is that the sugya is not assuming like Abai, it's assuming like Rava. It's not, you know, I'm not reluctant to state that, because given how strongly the Maskanas HaGemara comes at him, it's the Stam of the Gemara, that Hilchas HaGabai B'yal Kagam, it would be surprising to find the Stam sugya that is working with Rava's assumption, but probably Rava's assumption works much better in the Gemara. Again, how you know Tvichas in the Altar, I don't know, but if you assume that... let me frame it differently. The way Tosfos explains, the reason why you say that la'alta doesn't mean la'alta mamish is because you want to allow time for the yeish to happen, right? That's what Tosfos says. So if that's the case, you look at the top Tosfos. V'yishlomar the tficha, the last two word, last second to last real line at the end. V'yishlomar the tficha nami in derech lepoch la'alta at sheyavah lebeiso v'tokach mistama yodim abaylim. But if mistama yodim abaylim, you know, if you leave enough time that mistama the abaylim find out, why can't you assume that we also heard that the Bailam were miyayish? Meaning, the Gemara's whole reason for saying that Mechira is li'altar is because Tvichas li'altar, and in that interim, it's inconceivable what? That we heard that he was miyayish. Well, why is it inconceivable? Presumably because there was no time, because there's no time for him to find out and to have yayish, to have explicit yayish. And so Tosfos' teretz to make it for the Bayi undermines the whole point of the Gemara. Okay. And Nadav?
Is it possible that the Torah with Mechira transaction?
Someone answer that question. Shalom? Yeah, that's the machlokes of Nachman Rav Hirsch. Whether or not Mechira is halachic Mechira, or Mechira is just the balabatish Mechira. Yeah. Okay. Fine. So now, Rabbi Yochanan comes along. I'm the Rabbi Yochanan. Geneva benefesh tochiach shen yesh bailem v'chayiv. So mechal desev Rabbi Yochanan lefnei yesh chayiv. Okay, we're going to move on to Rabbi Yochanan's other half. Rashi here says something. Let me ask a question. How do you know it's before Yesh? Rashi makes a statement here, which is an incredible musafar. In fact, I just saw in the pizza store, past as I was leaving, Rabbi Twersky, not my Rebbe, but one of many distinguished Twerskys from Pittsburgh. I don't remember his first name. He's the one who's written all the books on, you know, abuse. What's that? I don't remember. I know his first name.
Oh, Dr.
Abraham Twersky. That's right, Dr. Abraham Twersky. And speaking about self-esteem, which is a major, major, major issue in all these addiction/aberrant behaviors. So Rashi has what looks like a stunning comment on this. He says, "Geneva benefesh hagoni nefesh shemachar in kanyesh ina the misyai shalatzma." Ina the misyai shalatzma. A person never gives up hope on oneself. What it means in this specific context, obviously, is that the person doesn't assume that he's going to be permanently whatever. He assumes he'll get away or something like that, maybe. But obviously, as a statement taken in isolation, it's like Hadash Asur Ben HaTorah. Eina Demisyai Shel Atzma. A person is not supposed to give up hope on oneself. People sometimes there are some people who never miss Yesh, and some people never have a Mina Yesh. That's not healthy either. But some people... have a tendency, a danger of being misyai shel atzmam. A person is never supposed to give up on oneself. So it's not, I don't think, what Pshat and Rashi is, but nonetheless, the line set up there is just, it's like a fat curveball hanging over the middle of the plate. Anyway, but it is a true statement on multiple levels. Or it's true on one level, and it's supposed to be true on another level as well. Okay, and so what's the din by Geneva Benefesh? Even though there was no yesh, the guy sells it. So then Yechai Misa. So that's Rabbi Yochanan's argument. The one interesting thing It's a funny analogy also, because something else has to take place. What other way is Geneva Benefesh and Geneva Mamon not analogous? And it could undermine Rabbi Yochanan's point.
When you're moving a
bull
or shooting someone.
No. Just a very, not conceptually. Practically.
That Misa is not Tashlumin. And Keitha would be Tashlumin. I mean, if I steal an object.
No. Rabbi Yochanan's point is that it's called Umcharo. It's called Umcharo. Rav Sheshis is Rabbi Lazar's point, is that Umcharo means Halachic Mechira. And if everybody agrees that there's no Mechira before Yeyush, so how can you ever actually fulfill the condition of Umcharo by Geneva Benefesh? So the answer is that Umcharo by Geneva Benefesh doesn't mean a Halachic Mechira, it means a Baal Batish Mechira. There's only one problem with that. What is required in order to be Chayav Misa by Geneva Benefesh? He left out two very important words. No. That's Mishpatim, but that's not something he does. That's just the end result. In fact, I don't know what Vinim Savi Yado means, actually. Because how can you sell someone and then Vinim Savi Yado? I don't know what that means. It's an obvious question. I never thought about it. I don't know. I'm not sure how Chazal handle that. It means probably it was Nimtza B'yado Kfarav with Aiden. Yeah, it is. That's why it's the perfect. And that's like B'nikra Balabayas El Halad Kim, B'nikra Kfar. But that's when Nimtza B'yado, they would read that as Ukfar Nimtza when he's holding their Aiden that he had possession. But there's something else that's required, Michael.
Oh,
No. You see? V'hisamer bo mcharo, you have to do a tashmish with him of a shava pruta's worth. You have to make use of him. And one might have argued that that constitutes a kind of bailus, just like you have chazaka by karka. What you do by chazaka is you act. What is an algado paratz by karka? Just as the kinyana metaltlam, it means you do an act to demonstrate bailus. It's kind of chazaka. So you might argue that there, the kinyan that you're doing on the evet is accomplished not because of yeyush, but accomplished because of chazaka. And then you sell him. So, you know, anyway. But from Rabbi Yochanan's perspective, the argument is that Umcharo, just as Umcharo by Geneva Benefesh is a Balabatish Mechira, so too Umcharo by the Tvicha Mechira of Dal Vehei is also a Balabatish Mechira, and it doesn't matter whether it's legally efficacious. Whether or not it's binding, it's still called Umcharo and Yuchai Dal Vehei. Okay, so that is what Rabbi Yochanan said. Any questions about that? Okay, so now the Gemara continues. So we see, Michal de Sava Rabbi Yochanan lefnei Yeyush chayiv lachar Yeyush mai. What does he hold lachar Yeyush? Going back to the, what is really the question? No. Lachar Yeyush. The Gemara says, what does he hold lachar Yeyush? What is this question? Yeyush kidikani or not? It's back to that same question. So now this is, you know, debate number version number 3 and 4 if you add Gittin into the mix, right? Fourth time you have a machlokes lama around the Gemara, never really here it glues some of the pieces together, but it never really ties the knot of all of them. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan Amar Chayev Reish Lakish Amar Potter. Even the glue in the sugya is funny because you say Laacha Yerushmai. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Chayev Reish Lakish Amar Potter. Normally, when you get a question like this, Laacha Yerushmai, what are the next two words out of the Gemara's mouth? If it were Tana and they wanted to know what he held, what would the two words be? Toshma. Right? Mai, you know, La'achar Yeish Mai, normally you then bring a statement and you want to show that Reish Lakish said this and that, and therefore you can infer from their machlokas what each one holds by Yeish Kedikani. Here the Gemara just turns around and quotes the machlokas directly on the topic. It's a strange transition. Okay, so anyway, Rabbi Yochanan Amar Chayev, Reish Lakish Amar Potter. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Chayev Chiyuv Ben Lefnei Yesh Ben Lachar Yesh. Nothing yet. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Potter Chiyuv Lefnei Yeshu. Aval Lachar Yesh Kona V'Shalom Tevev Shalom Humocher. Again, that's the Gemara's Hesber, but no reason to assume otherwise. That's consistent with what everything we've seen until now. Among the Amoraim. Eisvei Rabbi Yochanan Amar Shlokish Gona V'Hikdish V'Achar Tkach Tavach Mishalim Tashlom Mekef V'Mishalim Tashlom Rabba Chamisha. Now this is a very... The Shachlantari Gemara here is a little bit tricky. You have to sort of keep a few balls in your head at the same time. A guy steals something, and he's makdish it. And then he shechts it. He pays careful, he doesn't pay dalad v'hei. Now, why doesn't he pay dalad vehe? What could explain the Torah that doesn't pay dalad vehe? Eyal? Okay, or? They may both be come together in this case. Or? Chaim? No. That would do just the everybody that Yal said that you're Kona, that you're Motzi Rishus Baal, or that you don't pay Dal Vahey on Hekdesh. You don't pay Dal Vahey on Hekdesh. If you steal Hekdesh. Yeah. Yeah. No. Okay, so I might say in this case they probably go together. They go together because if the Hekdesh was not successful, then it still belongs to the original Baalim and you're not Kona. If it belongs to Hekdesh, it's not the original Bailims anymore, and you put on Dalal Beis. In this case, I think the two of them go together. So now, he says as follows. When, before we read in the Gemara, when did the Hekdesh take place? If it took place before Yeyush, it's not Hekdesh. You steal that clear in a Makdish Tavashayna Shalah. Now, what happens if it took place La'achar Yeyush, but we assume that Yeyush Kedi Lo Kani? So is it Hekdesh? Yes, so this is the part that you have to get. That's called Yeyush plus Shina Rishus. It's a funny thing. It's a little bit like Gito V'yado Boin Ke'echad. Eina the Makdish Davar Shena Shalom. So you'll say, so even if it's La'achar Yeyush, but you can't have the Shina Rishus until after it's his, so how can you be Makdish? So the answer is no. Can a person be Mocher Davar Shena Shalom?
No.
So if I steal something and the Baalim have Yeyush, if you hold Yeyush Kedias Lokani and I sell it, is the sale binding?
Yeah.
Yes, because we say it's Yeyush plus Shina Rishus.
But Shina Rishus happened after the
Yeyush. Actually, no, because we saw the Gemara earlier seemed to think it didn't matter which direction it went. And the Gemara on Samach Hesem and Aleph, the Gemara at least at some point in the Havamina, it never explicitly rejected it, assumed it doesn't matter, even though I agree with you. I thought that it has to be Yeyush and then Shina Rishus. But in this case, this is Yeyush then Shina Rishus. Sure it is.
If you're Makdish, then after that...
No. I didn't say that. I meant the Yeyush could take place after you steal it, before you Makdish it. I'm asking to you, if the Yeyush took place after the Hekdesh... If the Yeyush took place after the Hekdesh...
I'm saying even if it took place before, there's no Shina Rishut to make it yours when you're Makdish it. The Shina Rishut takes place...
Oh, okay, so you want to argue here there's none by definition, because if the Hekdesh... Fine. But by a Mocha, you could have that. You agree with that? Okay, but no, my point is, bottom line is... that a person cannot be mocher davar she'eino shelo. And the only reason why you can be mocher la'achar yeyush is because the yeyush v'shina rishus, the kinyan and the mechira are boim ke'achad. Because through the shina rishus that you're about to undertake, the object becomes yours to sell, at least for the purposes of selling. So by the same token, once you have yeyush, after you stole it, even though it's not yours yet, because yeyush kedi lo kani, when you're makdish it, that's like being mocher it. That's transferring, and because you'll have Yeyush plus Shina Rishus, so we say, that's why I say Gita V'yada Bayin Ke'echad. It's simultaneous, your Kinyan and your Mimakdashit. If there was no Yeyush, you don't have the power to be Makdashit, because Shina Rishus alone is not Kona, and therefore the Hekdesh is not Chal. And just as the Mechira wouldn't be Chal. But if you had Yeyush, even though you're not Kona yet with the Yeyush, because Yeyush Kedi Lokani, assuming Yeyush Kedi Lokani, nonetheless, when you combine that with the Shina Rishus, at that time it becomes yours to sell, yours to be Makdash. No, because let's say the Ganav gets caught after Yeyush. Does he have to give the object back, or no, does he just have to pay? That's why it matters. And Echanami, once he gets rid of it, everybody agrees that Yeyush plus Shina Rishus is Kona. It's only if you catch him before there's a Shina Rishus afterwards.
So the case that we
one second, Michal.
So, I don't really see how you can align Hekdesh and Hira so closely. I mean, first of all, there's not really such thing as a Balabata Hekdesh versus a Midoraisa Hekdesh, an efficacious Hekdesh. And second of all, doesn't this create a problem with God Hekdesh Yonah? Because if they're going to say that it became yours to make a Shinui Rishus, so now Hekdesh should be able to claim it as a Rishus.
I don't understand the second part. The first part requires two comments. One is that the Gemara has a comment, assumes that if you're makdish, the Gemara is going to raise the Yesh question again later. There's a problem here. The problem is, the Gemara says, Mali mechara lehedyot, mali mechara lashamayim. Yes. Now, to make that a little more understandable, Mechar and Matana have the same din. Right? We saw in the Mechilta that Matana, Gone Venosein, is also Chayiv Dal Vehe. Hekdesh is a kind of Matana. So the Gemara's line later is, Mali mechara lehedyot, mali mechara lashamayim. It makes no difference. You're transferring it out of your Rishus. What you are asking, now, that raises a problem here because Gonav HaHikdash should be Chayim for the Hekdash, as is Mechira. I don't remember how, and if it's before Yeyush, the Gemara is going to talk about it later, not in our Sugya, later in the Perek. So I don't remember what the Maskana of the Gemara is, how they deal with that, but it's going to come back to this these very issues. But there's a different question that you're raising. What was your whole first thing again? Something else that bothered me about it, which is a good question. So that observation, I think, is fundamentally correct. Although maybe not, but I think it's correct, which is that a hekdesh which is not chal is not a hekdesh. No one would say that. No one would say that if you makdish something, it's not chal, but it's still called a balabatish a hekdesh. And if you were chayiv and dal, if you were chayiv mechira, a chayiv on dal behave for mechira of be makdish something, you'd also be chayiv if you makdish and it failed.
So you're just agreeing that.
It's a good question. Would anybody say that there's such a thing as a balabat desh hekdesh? You tried, therefore you get punished. I don't think so. But it's a good question as to why not.
But then if you're going to use it to try to, as a support for the comparison, and you're saying the only source for it is the comparison, it kind of, I don't know.
All right, so anyway, for the moment, let's put aside the makdish part as being a mechira. Let's just pretend it's not a mechira, but that's going to eventually have to be dealt with. So if you do it before Yeyush, you makdish it, the hekdesh is not chal, there's nothing to talk about. If you're toveach and mocher now, obviously you're chayv dal behei because it still belongs to the original bailam. If, however, there was Yeyush, so then the hekdesh is chal, and when you're tavach achar kach, you're not chayv dal behei because it's not his anymore, it belongs to hekdesh, and you're not chayv dal behei on shel hekdesh. Now, One basic point that should be made. What is the din if you're gonev and there's yeyush and then you're makdish it? Can you bring it as a karban? Hi?
I mean,
I said if yeyush kedi lokani, but you have yeyush and then you're makdish it, and it's hekdesh because yeyush plus shin rishos, can you bring it as a karban? That's what you normally do with hekdesh. You take an animal, and you makdish it, so it's karban. That's what, right? In other words, when you makdish it, normally you makdish it as a specific karban, typically an olar shlamim, since it's voluntary. You're not in, in fact, if it's a behema that's tamim, there's an iser lav of being maspis tamimim lebedek abayis. Just as you're not allowed to be makdish it b'amun lamizbeach, you can't be maspis tamim lebedek abayis. If you have an animal that's tamim, you want to be makdish it, it's got to go lamizbeach. Such a din, Ami? But hekdesh was koneh. If it's stolen, then how is it hekdesh? So you're correct. This is called mitzvah ba'baveira.
But if there was no yeyush,
it's not hekdesh. If there is yeyush, hekdesh is chal. But because, well, let me ask the following question on me. What if yeyush kedi is koneh? So I steal an animal to buy them on miyayish, and then I makdish it. Can I bring it as a carbon? And the answer is yes. What's the difference? The difference is that in one case, it was mine before I was makdish it, so the hekdesh is in effect beheter. In the other case, it only became mine, in effect, fleetingly, during the process of hekdesh constituted a gezel. And because the process of hektesh itself constituted the theft, the, you know, the permanent theft, being motzim or shusban impermanently, that's called mitzvah baba vera.
Shalom. Can you also say the answer being mocked or something? Meaning, does it belong to hektesh? You said you can't bring it as a korban. Do you
over
the answer of being
mocked? Mocked is mosbech. No, I don't think the Gemara discusses that. It's an interesting question, but.
The Gemara does say, Amar ula minayin negeisha inokona.
I understand.
So that means that after,
because
you should be able to.
No. The raya is the how could you have a carbon? No, you got to the right. Where are you? And daf samach zayin and beis. What? No, adarav. You have it all backwards. The whole point is that gozel is a raya that yerush kedi lo kani.
Right.
Because if yerush kedi was kani. So that if it's before Yeyush, it's not hektish, it's not an ola. And if Yeyush kedi, and if it's lacho Yeyush, so it's a carbon kasher. The only way you get a gusel that's going to be pasul, but that's going to be hektish, that we could call it, you know, carbonova lo a gusel, again, it's hektish, but there are two ways, actually. But the Gemara here on Sama Zayin, I'm base at the top, only entertains one. Rabbi gives the teretz.
If you would be kone before the makdish it,
That was where Rav actually gave two possibilities. So, but if you steal the animal before it's hektish, the only way to have an ola gezula that's pasul is if yeish kedi lo kani. Because if yeish kedi is kani, so then if you steal the animal and you makdish before yeish, it's not kadosh because there's no yeish. And if there is yeish, so yeish kedi kani, it belongs to you. Then you makdish it. It's carbon kasher. The only way you can get carbon ovalo a gozel, assuming you stole chum, Rava's other teretz was gozel carbon the chavre. Right? He only gave that once, he didn't give it the first time. And the only way you can get that is if you assume that yeish kedi lo kani, and it's a case where you stole the animal, you had yeish and you marked the shit. And it becomes kadosh through the yeish plus shina rishus, but because that constitutes an avera, it's kol mitzvah b'avera, it's permanently possible. So the rai is ad rava. Right, a carbon overlaw gozel proves that yesh kedi lo kani. Then it's kasher.
Then it would be kasher.
Then it'd be kasher, right? Ayel?
I don't understand. When before he's makdish it, right, it's not his.
Correct.
Right. So how, that's what I was asking before. How could he be makdish?
So what?
That same action is making his.
So I gave you the analogy by a guy who steals an ant, assuming yesh kedi lo kani. Assuming Yeish Kedi Lo Kani, he steals an animal, the Bailam of Yeish, he now sells it to someone else. And some Amoraim claim that the reason why he's Chayav Dalvehe is because the Kone actually acquires title to the animal. Because they assume if the Kone did not acquire title to the animal, you wouldn't be Chayav Dalvehe. That Umechara has to be a Halachic Mechir and a Baal Batish Mechir. Now, when you steal that animal and the Bailam of Yeish, does it belong to you? No. So how can you sell it? It's the same issue. So that's what I'm telling you. That's why I made the analogy to Gita v'yado ban ke'echad. Okay? And you want to give a get shichur to an eved, right? You want to give a get shichur to an eved, so masha kana eved kana rabo. So when you give him the shtar, well, that goes back, you have to give it to the eved, not to the owner. So but the assumption is we work on the simultaneity principle. Yes?
According to the opinion that shichur should happen before yayosh?
Yeah.
I steal an animal from you and then you have Yeyosh, it should be mine. Because the Shunir Rishus happened when I stole it, and the Yeyosh happens afterwards.
No, it means, when we say Shunir Rishus, we mean it moves out of the Rishus of the Gan of the Gazlan. That's
fine.
What Shunir... because it's not a Geneva until after you first take it out of the Rishus of the Bailam. Once I have an object which is stolen, now the rule is that Yeyosh plus Shunir Rishus.
So he's saying simultaneity,
right.
It's the Zela and Shunir Rishus at once.
No, so no. I'm telling you that the definition of shini rishus means shini rishus haganav. That's what it means.
Why?
Because it removes it one step further. The answer is because it removes it one step further, you know, from the possession of the owner. You could enter. That's my assumption behind why shini rishus contributes to the kinyan. One could ask me a very populish question, which is what happens if the ganav turned around and sold it to the nignav. But the Nignav didn't know he was buying the Chayfetz HaGazel, assuming it's not a Mekach Tos. And now the Ganav goes ahead and, you know, according to that logic and Shecht, well, you know, you can see where this is going. In other words,
okay.
Right? a little pilpul too. What's the problem? What? No, I didn't say that alone, but the argument of why Sheen and Rishus should be constitute a Kenyan, that's in combination with Yeush, is because it's misalik it further from the Rishus of the Nignav. You know, it's removed it another step in taking out of the Ganav's Rishus. So my Pilpulish question is, what happens if the person you sold it to... That's why I'm asking the question. In other words, I don't know what the din is there. That's what I'm saying. In other words, let's say you had Yeush, and then you go buy the object back. No, 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 it's your object.
Well, so you do know it's your object. What's the difference
with the object?
So you do know. He holds around something.
Only by Zayla does it make a difference that the actual
object. Why does it matter if he knows? If he knows the object, that raises all sorts of different questions. Does the fact that he's buying it, does it constitute mechila in the first place? You know, on the original Geneva and so on. That's why it makes it very complicated. The problem of... I don't want to go any further down this. The problem of... That might be fine. The problem on the other side is that if he doesn't know it's his stolen object, maybe it's Mekachtos on the second Mechira. I'm not going to pursue that further. Okay. So anyway, so this was the kasha.
We had a case where we had a ganav stealing from a ganav.
Yes.
And we said we had a possibility that would never be in the reshus of the middle of the first ganav. That's because the shina reshus doesn't count for him because he wasn't selling it. In other words, we had the ganav steals from the owner, and then a ganav steals from him.
Right.
From the for the first ganav. So. If there was not Yeush yet when the Ganav first
stole it, yeah.
If the second Ganav took it from the Rashut of the first Ganav, then that's Yeush and Shina Rashut. Which makes it kani to the second Ganav.
Yes.
It doesn't make it kani to the first Ganav.
Correct.
But if this first Ganav decided to sell it, then his reshut to the buyer's reshut, that would be a shina reshut that makes it kona to him.
No.
Not to the seller.
No.
I mean, not to the buyer.
No, yes to the buyer. He never takes possession of it. In both our case and...
You didn't say that the shina reshut that goes with the Yeush works to make it his? You said he can't sell it unless it's his.
It makes it his, but only for a fleeting, you know, phantom second, right? Because in other words, the only way it's becoming his is by going... It's an irony, right? It becomes his to sell it to be makdish by leaving his rishus. So it never actually is a time that you say it's his. It's just enough bailus that when he sells it to the other party, it becomes the other party's. If I buy some object not from its owner, I'm not konet normally. Right? If I buy Shlomo's Gemara from you, that's very nice, but I don't own the Gemara. So here, when the guy buys it from the Ganav, the Yeish plus Shina Rishus makes it the Ganav's just long enough in effect. You know, I don't want to call it a microsecond. It makes it enough to be his just so that he can sell it.
So really, Shina Rishus makes it the buyers, not the sellers.
Correct, but it enables the seller to sell it. Well, if you hold Yeush, no, if you hold Yeush as Kani Lagamre, you're only Chai before Yeush. So it's not Kona yet, so it doesn't belong yet. Yes, but I would say in order to be patur, in order to say shalohu toveh, shalohu mocher, it means it has to be yours before the sale or the tzvicha.
Yeah.
By the same token, because the tzvicha, whenever you start, we point out, when you start the tzvicha, so right then, it's a shinu, it's kone, right? So why don't you say it's shalohu toveh? You can ask.
What are the two options we have for a
There are The one option is to say that Yesh alone is Kona Lagamri. If I steal something from you, you're Miyayish, it belongs to me, period. Yes. And the other sheet that says that no, that Yesh Kedi is Lokoni. Now, what is assumed is that Yesh plus Shina Rishus, the Gemara says, Davart Mika Lamandama, that Yesh and Shina Rishus is not Kona. So obviously it means that if you are Miyayish, I don't own it, but if I sell it, the sale is valid. So in other words, at the time of the sale, you know, for that fleeting moment, but not before the sale, during the sale, it becomes mine enough to sell it. That's all. That's what the Yesh accomplishes. Okay. So now the Gemara's Kasha was as follows. Again. Here it doesn't say Birshuso because that's Rabbi Yochanan's din later. The Braisa here only says Shalom. He points out in Hagos Vitziyuna that some are Goreis Birshuso. Okay. Ella Pshita La'achar Yeyush V'tayma Dehikdish Hudein Mishan Tashlemer Bav Chamisha Dechikotavach Dehekesh Hatavach Aval Lo Hikdish. So the reason why your potter is because you were Makdish. So in other words, at that point it belongs to Hekdesh, and therefore you put from Dalvehe. But if he wasn't Makdish, then Tavach Mishan Tashomer V'chamisha. So what it must be a case of Lachar Yesh. And you see that if it weren't for the fact that you were Makdish it, you would be Chayav on Dalvehe. V'isal Gadai Toch Yesh Kone Amay Mishalim Shalom Tavar Shalom Ocher If Yesh Kediz Kani. It's a good question. So Amar Lei, Hacha b'may Eskinan, Kigon Shehikdishu ba'alim biyad ganav. It's a case where no, the Bailam were makdish it in the hands of the ganav. The ganav stole it, and the Bailam turned around, and they were makdish it. So, what's that? Yes, and maybe we'll even create a mess for the other guy. That's a debate later. Not quite this bad. There's a line that looks like it should be. Did any of you get the Samach Tes Samen Aleph? There's three words there that look like it's a pasuk. I always thought it was a pasuk. It sounds like a pasuk from Mishlei. It's not a pasuk anywhere in the Bible. At least not in the...
Which one?
Haliteu l'rasha?
Yeah. Okay, I didn't read that.
How do you vocalize that, by the way? That last word. Yes, as opposed to? Right. What's the difference between the two? No, that you must. I see the biblical Hebrew takers haven't gotten that far yet. What's the difference between Biyamus and Biyamos? No, that they haven't gotten that far yet. And you obviously know the difference between the two. What's that? Yes, close enough to. One is... Yamus is he will die. Yamos is let him die. Okay, one is a wish, and one is. Yes, Tamos Nafshi and Plishim. It's all over the place. If you want to recognize that, by the way, just the tip. If you want to, sometimes you can't tell the difference between the two meanings. It's one of my favorite art scroll mistakes. Yismachu Hashemayim v'sagel ha'aretz. V'sagel means. They translate, the heavens will be happy and the earth will rejoice. But that means that not only did not know the English language, they don't know the Hebrew language either. It means let the heavens be happy and let the earth rejoice. Yismachu, you can't tell. Yismachu can mean either. But v'sagel, had it meant it will, it would have said v'sagil. But because it says v'sagel, that's a jassive. The way you know, one of the ways of knowing a jassive form, is it's the same form that's always used without that meaning with the vavahipuch. Yakum means... Yamus, he will die. Yamos, let him die. And when you want to say, and he died, you say, Vayamos, the second one being the Kamatz Katon, because the accent shifted away from Chol Chaser. When it's at the end of a pasuk, and you have and for causal purposes, the truff shifts back, you know, it says, and Adam lived X number of years, and what happened? Vayamos, because the accent moves back, it turns back into a Chol Chaser. But anyway, but that form, Yamos, is the... is the one that means let him. And if you a couple of weeks parshas down the line, it's one of the strange things, the way the Baalim HaSorah vocalized. Who was the respectful one to his father? Esav or Yaakov? Esav or Yaakum? No, but you see, if you look at that, that's the only place in Tanakh Yaakum is spelled without a vav. It should have been vocalized Yaakum. Who is more respect? Yaakov speaks in second person. Right? For now, all you guys will refer to me in third person. Okay? Because for now, when I give a real share, not an academic Talmud share. And therefore you refer
to me. Is that what the Rebbe really wants?
And therefore.
You
edit
that out of the.
No. I'll have more to say about it later. Anyway, so the truth is Yaakov speaks in the second person. He says, Kum na shiva. And the truth is, na doesn't really mean please. Na means now. Ke'an is how Unklus always translates na is ke'an, which is short for ke'enes, which is ka'es. Right? Yaakov speaks in the second person. Esav, pshutosh the vocalization, since it's chaser, should have been Yaakomavi, let my father get up. It's third person. That's the way you talk. I wonder whether or not the tradition, and it may predate the Baal HaNisar, of vocalizing Yaakum was to avoid the polite way of speaking. You know?
Where do you see that?
My father will get up and eat from it. I have a very strong suspicion that that's why they vocalize it that way. No, because it's, yes, generally, but on this, the way Esav was mechabed his parents, but he was a boor, so Yitzchak says, I call Yaakov, Rashi, I think, quotes there. You know, that Esav doesn't speak this way. Esav doesn't speak kumna. But instead, right? But Esav was really the way, we think the third person is polite. I mean, that's the ultra polite, right?
An old biblical hero.
It's back and forth. People talk to God in the second person. They do. We do also. We also, you know. But at the end of the day, it's clear many places where third person is really the more respectful tone.
Like in the Megillat Esther, for example. But what about sort of
elsewhere too?
Early on.
In Shmuel, you have it. The way Abigail speaks to David. I'm sure it's all, you know. You definitely have it. Yitzi?
Yeah, just about how you said that the...
And last comment, then I want to go back to everything.
About how the Joseph is the... For the season, but there is one exception besides the Joseph.
Oh, okay, I'm giving people a general clue. All right. So anyway, Halitel, the Rush of Yamos, looks like a Pasuk. I haven't done a search... That I wouldn't be shocked if it is in Ben Sira, but it sounds like a Pasuk. Right? Halitel in the Rush of Yamos. That's what it really sounds like. I always thought it was a Pasuk, and when bad look at the Gemara, there's no Tzion on the side. It's not in Mishlei, that's for sure. It's not in Tanakh. But somebody should go take a look and see, maybe it is in Ben Sira. It really does sound like, you know...
Doesn't the Torah even quote stuff in Ben Sira, though?
Like, yes. Right. Yes, but that's because they're the Baalei Tosfos in the Perek HaChovel. In this Pesechta, they have it. Even though the Gemara, says Meshulash B'Ksuvim. I think it's way near the end. It's like the last daf or so in HaChovel. But there, Tosos says it's not a... The Gemara quotes a pasuk as if it's from Scripture. It says, Meshulash B'Ksuvim, and Tosos says, we don't know where this pasuk is, maybe it's in Ben Sira, and then they put on the side, yes, yeah, from Ben Sira, Yigimel, or something like that. So anyway, so the attitude of the guy who's machdash it when it's in the hands of the Ganav may be, let's make trouble for him, because, you know, when he shechts it plain, so I may never see it. But if he shechts it after it's a karban, what's going to happen to him? He's going to get kares. Okay, or theoretically b'chai v'chata. So let's really, you know, let's put the poison pill in my animal. Okay, so whatever that may, I don't know if that's his logic. of course, no. Excuse me. Where in Tanakh did somebody have something stolen from them and they turned around and went back to shit? What? Pesel micha. Micha came and confessed to his mother, I stole the money. She had cursed whoever stole it, and she said, I already was makdashit Hashem, so that's why he made it into a pesel. That's a good way of doing things. That's not a medrash, that's the pasuk. What's that? They have a strange relationship there, obviously. Okay. Anyway, so the answer that Rabbi Meir Shlakish gives is that the hektesh took place after the Ganav stole it, before he was makdashit. And therefore, you don't need Yeyush as an issue because it belongs to Bishra Bailam. And it's on this that the Gemara all of a sudden launches the following question, which is a funny formulation. Umi kadosh, and is it really kadosh that way? Va'om Rav Yochanan gazal on asyashra bailam shtem yichon lahakdish ze lefi sheinu shalav ze lefi sheinu bishu. So, what's funny about the question? You're asking a kasha on Reish Lakish from a memor of Rav Yochanan. It's strange. And the answer is, the Gemara took this as almost axiomatic, what Rabbi Yochanan says. But it's not so pashut. It's not so aleph-based. Because Rabbi Yochanan was mechadesh that in order to be makdash something, in order to have enough bailus to be makdash it, it's not enough that it belonged to you. You actually have to have dominion over it. And if you don't at the moment, so then you don't have the power to be makdash. And how does he know that? Because beso. Because ma beso shelo ubershuso. And how do you know that beso is bershuso? Because it's hard for a house to get up and walk across the street. Right? The house usually stays where it is. And therefore it's karka. And a bais is mechubala karka. It's always by definition in the rishus of the bailim. And it's always theirs until they're maknet. Even when you go to goneva gozel karka, there's no kinyan geneva gzela. There's no kinyan geneva gzela. There's an isser geneva gzela. But there's no kinyan for the ganav and geneva gzela by karka. Because karka is always brishus bailim. So Rabbi Yochanan says that dumya de bais, it has to be shelo ubershusa. So the truth is, it's not a raya against Reish Lakish, because Reish Lakish maybe doesn't agree, and the Gemara is going to go on to find a Tana who holds like Reish Lakish. The only thing that's odd about it is that why do you need a Tana? Just say Reish Lakish darshans the pasuk differently. He says ma beis shelo af kol shelo, and who says bershusa? Right. In other words, and let's say you know. Anyway, so the I could darshan the following. That parsha is in the context of Eretz Yisrael, you know, Steachuza and so on. So ma beso Eretz Yisrael, I'll call Eretz Yisrael. Okay, but if it's not in Eretz Yisrael, you can't be makdash it. That's ridiculous. So I agree. There's a question of where you draw the line. So Reish Lakish could just say ma beso shelo af kol shelo. That's pretty straightforward. Okay, but Rabbi Yochanan was mechadesh, and this is a very important din. It's very important in many sugyas, including the one we're going to do. Rabbi Yochanan's notion that in order to have power of hekdesh, of kinyan, of anything of that nature on something, it's not enough to be yours, it has to be your rishus. And keep in mind that in the rishus shomer, is rishus of the nifkat is generally considered rishus bailim. Okay. So anyway, so the Gemara says as follows, Amrei hu da'amar kitznuim, he holds like the tznuim. The Tanan, Snuim once upon a time, were not people necessarily who wore a certain kind of garb. They might have, presumably they would send away their garb as well, but their tznius was expressed in a kind of general concern with the welfare of humanity, and apropos to Sefer Bereishis, as the Netziv writes in his introduction, it's called Sefer HaYashar, because Avraham Avinu next week is concerned not only about the tzaddikim, but he's concerned about the welfare of Rishayim as well. So he was concerned about the welfare of tzaddikim. He was concerned about the welfare of Rishayim, of Poshe Sodom and Amora. So the tzanuah is the person who cares about other people, even the people who are stealing his own fruits. That's what a tzanuah is here. I'm just pointing out the model the Mishnah describes of what the tzanuah were. The Mishnah says that tznuim. I don't think that tznuim was a private club you belonged to. Probably by definition not. But in other words, the Mishnah says that those who were tznua would do the following. So I think that gives you a guide that if you want to be tznua, this is the one kind of sensitivity you must have. So the tznuim manichen es ha-mos va'omim kol ha-nilkot mizeh yehem ha-chulal ha-mos ha-elu. Now this is in the context of what? Revai. Okay, it's in the context of Revai. Revai are the fruits of the fourth year. And what do we do with the fruits of the fourth year, Shlomo? You give it to the Kohen, of course, right? Uh-huh. Okay, so that's if you held like the Moritz Tzedek or Targum Yonah, Son Ala Torah. If you hold like Chazal, so then you give it belongs to the Bailam, it's like, it's Machlok Spesham Beisil. How much like Maisa Sheni, but it's Mamon, it's not Mamon Hedyo, but it's Mamon Bailam. Okay, and they get to eat it in Yerushalayim. And we assume, like they said, that you have all the dinim of Pidyon Revai, all the dinim of Pidyon Master Sheni apply to Pidyon Revai. So that's what we do with Revai. So the Mishnah says as follows, and we're going to see the full text of the Mishnah a little bit later. The Tznuim, man, let's actually go ahead, let's look at the Mishnah later, may as well, makes more sense once you're doing this. Utnan, about 9 lines down on Samach Tesamar Aleph, Utnan, Kerem Revai, Hayumitzayin, Oso, Bekazuzo Sadama. They used to, when you have a field, some say this, let's say it's a moment in Shvius for the moment. That's a question how you read the Mishnah. During the Shemitah year, when everybody's allowed to eat your fruits, so if you have a fruit tree that is Revai, you want them to realize this Kedushin. If they want to eat it, they have to take it to Yerushalayim. And if it's Orla, you want them to know that it's Asar Panah, they're not allowed to eat it. So the Mishnah says that Kerem Revai, they would mark with Kezuzos Adama. Simana Ki Adama, this by the way, obviously you know is not part of the Mishnah when you see the Aramaic interpolation. It's the Perush of the Gemara. Simana Ki Adama Ma Adama Ika Anamina Af Hainami Ki Mefarka Shari the Sanimina. Just as Adama can be ground up, Kezuzos Shadama are clods of dirt, and you can plant in them and they will grow. So therefore, so too, Pit Net and Revai has hope. Okay? Then shall orla vishal orla becharosis. You mark them with pottery shards. Simana kacharosis macharosis shein anamina af haydeles anamina. According to the Gemara here, the assumption is that you can't grind them up; they won't grow anything. Tosis has a kasha on this. From it's a Matthias question. I don't know how well it would grow. I don't see why. No, it depends on the tree, probably.
No.
The simen is, it's not about whether it grows well or not. It's whether or not the fruits that grow have any hope. So fruits of orla, what's the din of orla fruits if you leave them till after the third year? What's the din? You can't eat them. It doesn't make a difference by orla whether or not, it's not the year, it's when the fruits grow. And therefore, once the fruits grow in the orla, and this is stated explicitly, I think, somewhere in Chazal, this point, that it's not just when you can't eat them, but it's when they grow that determines permanently their status. So orla you mark with charosis because that basically has no, you can't plant anything in that, and therefore orla can never have anah from it. So afhai deles halamine. And finally, v'shel kvaros besid, you mark graves with presumably white plaster, simana de chiyur ka'atzamos. Okay, it's white like bones. Okay, I guess bones probably are white. I mean, I only see bones, but I guess right. Chicken bones. I don't really eat chicken so too much, so I don't see the bones. But chicken bones are white.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay,
so
there you go.
Teeth are bones.
What?
Our teeth are also bones. They're generally white.
Okay, there you go. I expect from calcium. Fine. That's what the Mishnah says. Now it continues. Umemacha v'shofech. And you, memacha means to really, I guess, grind it up a little bit, to melt it or to dilute it, and you spill it all around the kever. Ki hecha dini chaver tvei. So that it gets really, white all over the place. It's not just like one spot where it's densely white, but it's clearly a whole light splotch. And then the Mishnah continues. Amar Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, ba'medva marmur b'shvias. That's only true in the Shemitah year. The hefker ninu, that everything is hefker, so therefore you want to save people from making a mistake and eating either orla, which they should never eat, or eating revai before they're poded or they bring it to Yerushalayim. However, avol b'shar shnei shavua haliteu l'rosh aviyamos. The rest of the week, namely of the Shemitah cycle, the rest of the other 6 years, stuff it, haliteu, where is haliteu? You have haliteini nam in ha'adom adam hazeh. It means to, haliteini, mal'iten es agamo, means you open its mouth up and you just shove, pack the food in. So let him stuff his face and die. Okay. So anyway, vatsnuim, manichin es amos fa'omrim, kol anilkot mizeh mechul amos halalo. If they at least want to save the person the trouble by revai, it doesn't work by orla, they would be poda the revai. They'd be poda the revai.
Isn't there a similar pasuga of a halitei in Masechet Berachot between who one of the Tanaim was praying for certain like evil people in his city to die, and his
It's Rameir and Puria's story in Brachos.
Yeah, right.
Yes, that's the question. Who was right? Al Pshuto Shemekar Rameir was right.
Except if he was reading.
Because Chataim doesn't mean sins. Chataim means sinners. I understand. Yitamu chatam in aretz rishayim odeinam. Right. So.
Kamatz patach.
So bruya. No, the word chatayim. Uvedera chatayim laomad. The word occurs so many places over. With the word chatayim means a sinner. But you could read it as the plural chait as opposed to chotim. That was Bruria's drasha. Bruria, they say that the women know Tanakh, but she obviously knows biblical Hebrew so well. But anyway,
I'll take
hard reading, a hard
I'll
reading.
Take the chataim,
she, Her reading was Yitamucha time in Aretz, sins should disappear, and therefore Rishaim Odeinam, therefore there are no more wicked people. It's a beautiful reading. I mean, the message is a very important message. One wonders sometimes whether Breuer is right or Rameir was right. Here, obviously, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel expresses a sentiment that was more in accordance with Rabbi Meir, his contemporary's assessment, rather than Breuer's. But okay.
Wasn't this Rabbi Meir's pasuk, or what pasuk did he quote? I'm sorry for it. Yeah. I thought it was something like this. Like,
no, I don't think he quoted a pasuk. And Breuer said, Yitamu chatoim
v'lo chotim. The Rasha should swallow his evil and die or something.
What's that? He was praying that Ahu, I think it was Ahu Minim, here, give it to me. Ahu Minim to have Bishavusa Rabbi Meir, to have a Kametzari lay. I need Tzavav.
If you change,
I might be making that up completely. Does anyone know where this Gemara is?
It's very early on,
though. I'm sorry? I'm sorry?
Oh, I only know it's early on. I don't remember exactly where.
Here it is. This looks like where it would be. I see the Pasak Yitamuch, but I don't see Breuer's comment here. I see Breuer too. Hani Biryone. Hani Biryone, the Havu Bishavus, the Rameh, the Hava Kametzari, the two Hava Kabai Rameh, Rachme, Ilavehu, Kiheha, Dele Musu, that they should die. Amr Le Bri, Idibisu, Maidaitach Mishun, the Sevitamu, Chatayim, Xiv, Chotim, Chatayim, Xiv. The Ode, Shafil, the Sevit, the Kor, Rishayim, Arenam, Kavim, the Itamu, Chatayim, Urishayim, Arenam, therefore you'll have no sinners. You'll have no sinners. Elabai Rachme, Alaya, de Lahadru, Bitshuva, and then Rushayim Aranam, Boy Racham Elai Vahadru B'tshuva. It's a little funny because Hakobi De Shemayim Chutz Mi Yerushalayim, so it would seem that Rabbi Meir's approach was the correct one. You can't pray that someone else does tshuva because that's not up to God to do.
But he managed it.
That's up to them.
Yeah,
apparently he's a talented fellow. But you should have prayed that they should die because God has been able to kill them. So, okay, anyway. Okay. Anyway, be that as it may, so that was the point of the Tznuim. Now, what's the problem with the Tznuim? The problem with the Tznuim is that when you say Kol Anilkat Mizeh, it sounds like it should be called Anilkat Mizeh. That which was gathered from this is now redeemed. It happened already. And if it happened already, it means that somebody stole the fruits already. Now, I always was bothered by a different issue. Maybe they ate it already. If they ate it already, nobody's going to say that the pidyon works.
Even
Reish Lakish, what?
They do it afterwards?
Yeah, that's good. Call Hanilkat Mizeh. Yeah, the Gemara makes the whole deal. Call Hanilkat versus Call Hamislakit. Call Hamislakit means that which will be, but that raises a Brei Rishayla. Right? But right, Nilkat with a Patach, because you know that Nif'al is past, Nif'al is present. So Nilkat means that which was gathered. It means you're doing it at the end of the day.
I mean, it could be that they assume that If they ate it, there's nothing we could do anyway. Which they didn't. Eat, so we might as well cover.
Okay, everything. I thought about that in the past, and I think that's the right parrot. And I forgot it, but yes, I think that's a good idea. That probably makes sense. As what they did. There's nothing you can do. But if it's still extant, at least they could save them from further avera.
Except that it would have to be in your shoes.
No. So the point is, but the tznuim, the assumption is once you're already being podet because they gathered it already, it was nilkat already. It's not brishus by them, and yet the tznuim held that you could be podet. I'm not going to elaborate at great length now, but obviously the link that's being made between the two is that if you cannot be makdish davar she'eino b'rishuso, you cannot be poda davar she'eino b'rishuso. There's a long tosfos that we're going to have lots of fun with on Samaches Amud Beis, who really explores this question of what the link is. It's very much, you know, it has echoes to some extent of what? Of the same kasha you ask about Kinyan versus, you know, Shina Koner by Esnan Zona, and by Reishis Hages. In other words, what is the connection between Shuni Kona and those Dinim? In the same way, you know, there is an attempt here to equate all types of Kinyan together when maybe they're not actually equatable. But that's something we'll have to talk about. Okay. So anyway, so based upon that, the Gemara says that Reish Lakish holds like the Tznuim, the Tznants, and now go back to Sam Chesem Beis, the Tznuim Anichan Es HaMaos, Farim Kol Anil Kat Mizeh, Yehei Mechula Al HaMaos HaElu. So now the Gemara asks Akasha, if the Bailam are Makdashit before the Din Torah, how does the Gan of Chayiv Kefel? Varei Chazra Karen the Bailam. If the Bailam are now Makdashit it's no longer in the rishus of the ganav. So basically, it's as if he returned it. In other words, what would happen if the bialim went and took the object back from the ganav? The ganav went and paid back the object before Adim came. What would the din be? Chayvin kefa, patrin kefa. Pater. I even wonder if even if the shita that says modeh beknas v'yachar kach bo edim is chayiv, I wonder if I have to imagine that if you pay it back already, there's no longer any kefal. There's got to be a terminal point to it, right? You can't have that hanging over your head for the rest of your life. I don't know if anybody says this, but I'd imagine that modeh beknas v'yachar bo edim is only chayiv until you actually pay. No, no, but once you pay it back, if you pay back the right value, you can't say that you're going to get... No, so that's different, but then you didn't pay it back. Then that's called not paying it back. But I'm saying, you may have noticed that I sort of like this theme. I have this notion that maybe Shina is not Kona Legamre to be yours until you paid, at least. You know, but I have, but even if that other thing I said is a big chiddush. To say that Shina is not Kona until you've actually paid for it, that's a big chiddush. I wouldn't actually say that I think you're going to find anybody holds that way. But here, I would assume most of those are davar pashut, that there has to be sort of a terminal point when you paid back the karen already that you're not chayiv in kefil anymore. In other words, even if you say modeh v'knas v'achar bo edim is chayiv, that means before you pay back the karen. So anyway, sort of this guy has paid back the karen either because he paid it back or because the bialim took it back and had the bialim take it back, they were makdish it, so they removed the mirshus hagadah. Well, that's what I said before.
Right.
That's what I suggested before. Or he's going to shecht it, and even worse. Right? Me'ila, b'shogeg, yeli chayv a karbon, whatever. Well, you chayv a lesser karbon. You know, me'ila b'mezid, you're chayv malchus. So, shchutei chutz b'mezid, you're chayv karis. Okay. So, the Gemara says, how can you pay, what's the kash, ha'rei chazra karen l'bayim? How do you pay kefel? Because it's hektesh. Which means it's gone back to the bialim, and now the ganav just happens to be holding on to a hektesh item of the bialim, but you're not chayav kefal on hektesh. So the Gemara says, Kisha amad bedin. No, it means they had a din Torah, the ganav was nischayav, he hadn't paid back, and the bialim went out makdash it. Now the ganav goes ahead and shechts it. So the Gemara says the following. The Gemara, this is such a tangent, it's really unrelated. It just confuses you. Right? The basic premise of the next lines is that there's a difference between chayv atalitein lo and seivatein lo. Chayv atalitein lo is a situation in which the base and paskin's a certain way, but apparently it's not a final psak. Seivatein lo is a final psak. Okay, you know, one is like a theoretical ruling, the other is a final ruling, and therefore, and the Gemara makes the following claim that if after you're told Seitein lo, you're chayav to pay back, a final din, you go and shech the animal, you're not a ganav anymore. Once it's been established you're chayav to pay that you're a ganav, if you take the object and shech it now, you're a gazlan. Because you're no longer a secretive fellow, you're mechuyav to pay it back, and if you act now, you're acting as a gazlan. You're a gazlan on the object, so you can't be chayav, you can't now be nischayav dalvahe. So the Gemara says, if you only need for hektesh to pater on the dalad vehei, the only need for hektesh to pater on the dalad vehei is when you said wouldn't be true if you said say ten lo why the amarava say ten lo tavachu macher pater my tema came into paskul the most of a tavachu macher have a gazlam and gazlam in mishan tashlam abav hamisha chayev atali ten lo tavachu macher mishan tashlam abav hamisha. My time, kaven lo paska mil sakati ganavu lo tzrich lakati ganavu. So the Gemara gives the obvious answer. Okay, they say chayv atalitein lo. So at that point, once you're amad bedin, and Beis Din has established the chi of kefo, but they haven't actually paskin the din, so you're already chayv in kefo. It doesn't matter what happens to the animal. But if you were to go ahead and shech now, you're still a ganav, and you'd be chayv dal v'hei, because they haven't actually given the final psak. And therefore, you have to say hikdishuhu balim, and therefore he's patrim dalvane only because the bialim were makdish. That's what the Gemara. It's a funny formulation because the Gemara knows what the answer is. The Gemara knows the answer. It uses this as an excuse to present Rava.
Is this proving that the Rambam basically felt the kefal is kashlumin, meaning according to the Gemara, the Beis Din says save tainlo, he goes and shefts it. They classify him as a goslin. According to the Rambam, I don't have to return that specific object.
and give you two other sheep. Say ten lo.
No, one in be'en's be'en.
According to the Rambam.
Yeah.
You have to make kefel.
Yeah.
Kefel is tashlum, and there's no the way that
no.
we
No, only the kefel, not the keren.
The Karen,
you're still chayav to pay the be'en, even a ganav,
okay.
Even a ganav. Yeah, I think so.
No, because I thought you tried to say that the Rambam was really very similar.
Tosus Reed claims you have to supplement value.
Right.
But he doesn't say you don't have to pay the object back be'en. We could debate what he would hold, but I don't think.
I thought that's what we said, that the difference between Zayla and Gneva is that. Okay.
No, even the Reed would say you have to give the object back because it's still his, but because the din of Achiel, the Karen Kain Shagunov, you have to pay back any depreciation.
Oh.
He says so you have to give the animal that's been for Kepel and then pay Karen.
Yes. Yes, that's correct. Okay. Fine. All right, we read the Mishnah of Tznuim. Is there anything else? No, we'll talk about it next time. Next time we'll make it our business to finish to the Mishnah on Ayin Amud Aleph, God willing, next week. I just wanted to take 2 minutes to address something, because I'm told that the rumor mill is very active. I'm not going to address the larger issue right now. I just want to address the issue that's no gay at this year. And everything I say is repeatable in a public forum, because I want it to be made very clear. It doesn't need to be repeated in a public forum, but it may be repeated in a public forum. There are people who seem to have, and perhaps it's my fault, a misunderstanding of the nature of shir, or my shir. I value very highly that which I do outside of the Beis Medrash as well, in all sorts of disciplines and arenas, not limited to Jewish studies, even though that's where most of my work is. I also value very much what is known in some circles as mechkar, in other circles as academic Talmud. I think it's very interesting. To me, it's very interesting because I love learning Gemara for over 2 decades. And to me, when you love learning a text, you tend to be attracted and interested in all the various and sundry aspects of the text, of how it came to be. You know, not just in ideas that are floating in the air, but because Klal Yisrael, many from you have learned Gemara for a very, very long time. The Balei HaTosos were very concerned about how the Mishnah formulates things, whether it says, you know, Arbe Rosh Hashanah Haim, or whether you have a Haim, you don't have a Haim. Now, those questions may not fascinate me so much, but you can see what an attachment there was to the language, and sometimes their teretz, by the way, was because sometimes it does in one way, sometimes the other, but it interested them. And it interests me as well. And I look up to Rav and Abaye, and I would be interested in seeing pictures of Rav and Abaye, even though we never will, and maybe I'd be curious what Abaye and Rav wore as well. However, many of those aspects themselves are not Talmud Torah. And I don't believe, as I think you all know, that just because something is not Talmud Torah doesn't mean it isn't a worthy enterprise and worthy of our time. But there are some things that are basically somewhat called secular disciplines, even if they relate to Torah, even if they have some value in connection with Torah. Many of the things, however, that are often associated with academic Talmud, and some of us come to them via exposure to academic Talmud, some of us come to it via other exposure, sometimes intuitively, are tools that can be very valuable and I use the word tools, because tools are good things, are very valuable things in properly understanding forgive me for using the phrase, the Dvar Hashem and all of its manifestations has been expressed by Klal Yisrael throughout the centuries. And as such, if there's a particular tool that might now be more currently prevalent in the academy, but it is useful for Ben Torah studying, then I think it's a very valuable tool to use when one learns Gemara. One does not spend his time engaged in playing with those tools, but you rather take them and you use them in the context of your Talmud Torah. Most of these tools, if not all of them, should be non-controversial, even if somehow they have become. So, for example, and I've mentioned this before, even though we don't spend our shir doing girsaos, nonetheless, when you look at the Dikduke Sofrim, when it was published, it had the haskamos of all the Gdolei Hador there, starting with Rav Yitzchak Yochanan Spector, for whom our yeshiva is named. Now, Rav Shlomo Kluger, Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, major, major Gdolei Hador. It was a wonderful enterprise, all this tedious labor Rabbi Abinovich had undertaken to produce an amalgamation of the Kisveyan of the Gemara that was relevant to B'nai Beis Medrash. And frankly, for the most part, he did actually what was interesting of value to Torah study. He didn't have every vav and yud and every vinri and spelling. He had those things that he thought had an impact upon meaning of Gemara, which is the part that's relevant to the Beis Medrash. It doesn't really matter whether or not the Gemara uses the ohi ending or the oi ending contracted. It's very interesting if you're a linguist. It's not interesting in the Beis Medrash because it doesn't really matter in 99.9% of the contexts. When one talks about recognizing the layers and sugyos, this was a tool in the arsenal of the Balei HaTosfos. It was not invented in the 20th century by some hokrim in the academy. It was something that was well known to many, many Rishonim, and they use it to explain frequently problems within sugyos and between sugyos. There's nothing new about it. It is not the end-all and be-all of Talmud Torah, but it is another useful, valuable skill in learning Gemara. And this can be said for almost everything, not everything, for many things that certain people in the academy have been machshiv. Someone like David Weiss HaLivni was not interested in a lot of the modern academic Talmud, but was interested, again, I'm not commenting about the specific person, but in learning Gemara, and these are different methodologies that can add to one's arsenal. Despite my occasionally making fun, maybe more than occasionally making fun of myself for sounding brisk and making fun of brisk, conceptual analysis plays a very important role in learning, and as anybody who has been in this year for any period of time, you know, maybe not for 1 or 2 days, it could look different, knows that it plays a regular role, because especially when you learn Ezekiel and Nashim, there's no other way around it. You have to engage in it some of the time. Perhaps some people are more inclined to see it everywhere, and some people are inclined to see it in fewer places and sometimes seek out alternative solutions. But it plays a major, major role, even if it didn't come down Misinai that this is the only aspect of Talmud Torah one should engage in. It's still very important. So, hence, some people might walk away because what makes this year different, among other things, is that these are tools and methodologies that are acceptable to use. They're acceptable to supplement and to enhance and to magnify the scope of our Talmud Torah. And therefore, they may be emphasized because what characterizes the Shir is not, maybe it does actually, that we learn Gemara, but let's assume for the moment it doesn't characterize the Shir to say, what are you doing in your Shir? I learned Gemara, because that's not really helpful. That doesn't tell you anything. Yeah, but so does everybody else. And say, I learned Rishonim, and even if those two enterprises take up, you know, 90% of the time or more, it's not useful in characterizing it. So one of the things that stands out that gives the Shir a particular flavor is the presence of the question of layers and sugyos, more so perhaps than any of the other issues that come from Echkar, but other issues as well. Some perhaps have come to a misunderstanding based upon that this is an academic Talmud shir, and that we have a yeshiva, and we have many shir, maybe all the other shir that engage in Talmud Torah, and we do academic Talmud. But unfortunately, the only way one... Unfortunately, that's a false impression, and one that, if you spend time here, I think you figure out pretty quickly, simply doesn't reflect the reality. And to the extent that there are people in the institution, Talmidim, who seem to be under this impression that this is an academic Talmud shir, you might, especially if they raise the issue, point out that in fact you should invite them to come in, and they should sit in the shir for a week, not to come, but just to visit and see, you know, at the very least like you'd come into a museum to see. And this way they would be most welcome to understand what is it that we do in the shir. Because from my perspective, this is my passion, this is my Talmud Torah, this is what I spend much of my life doing, hope to spend most of my life doing, and I hope that my Talmidim, those who continue not in Torah and in Torah, will walk away enriched with their experience of Talmud Torah, not of academic Talmud. Not because academic Talmud is bad, but academic Talmud is not what you do in yeshiva. That's what you do in the academy. Some people really don't like it there either. I don't have the same problems with that, but that's not what takes place in the Kosle Beis HaMedrash. The Kosle Beis HaMedrash is a makom for Talmud Torah. In the traditional Beis HaMedrash, for the most part, although I don't see the need to restrict it to Bavli or even restrict it to Torah Shebaal Peh, but traditionally we study Gemara, we study Bavli, we do study Yerushalmi here too. I don't think the Yerushalmi was written by a bunch of academic scholars in the 4th or 5th century of the Common Era in Palestine. I think it was written by our holy ancestors, the Amoraim, and it was studied by our holy ancestors, as we've shown him, and it was once again brought into the curriculum by the Vilna Gaon. Maybe some think the Vilna Gaon was an incredible maskil, but the Vilna Gaon was a big Talmud Chacham, and was a very firm man, and he and his circles, those preceding and followed him, thought that the Yerushalmi and all these other texts were a valuable part of Talmud Talmud Torah, Torah Shebaal Peh, and belonged in the Beis Medrash. Maybe not Torah Shebichsav, but Torah Shebaal Peh certainly expanded scope. But that is what we do here. So if anybody is not clear, you know, on what it is, so if you could perhaps clarify that misimpression, because I don't want people to think either about this shir or about the Talmidim in this shir that somehow they're not engaged in Talmud Torah, but they're engaged in something else, because this is Talmud Torah, and if someone in fact was looking for that, they should go to a different address. I'm not sure where they go, but this is the wrong place to come. So if in case somebody should happen to come under that misimpression, if you could clarify that for them, I would greatly appreciate it. But I think in general, Sheker and Lashon Hara and Motzi Shema are things that are generally to be avoided, whether or not they've been mazed or b'shogeg. They can be b'shogeg too. But I think it's very important that people understand what exactly it is I'm about and what the shir is about. And if somebody thinks it's appropriate to them, that's wonderful. If it's not appropriate to them, that's fine. But this is our Talmud Torah, and very much in the tradition of our ancestors, even if it's, you know, not what some people want it to be or not what some people actually realize what it is. Are there any questions? Chaim.
Why is academic Talmud study
What does academic Talmud study mean, Chaim? Studying what Rav and Abaye wore, studying the economics of Mechoza, studying the sociology of Mechoza is not Talmud Torah. It's very interesting. If we could actually get to the bottom of it, I'd be fascinating, because people like to watch other people's lives generally. There's a kind of even this kind of voyeuristic tendency that people have. I don't know if it's a kind of vicarious enjoyment, whatever it is. So I would love to see, you know, to see a video of life in Mechoza. But the fact is, that's not studying of Mitzvos Hashem, not studying of the Agoda, which is meant to teach, you know, ethics and morality. It's not study of halacha. That's, I think, sort of what, you know, there's Torah Shebichsav, there's Torah Shebaal Peh. Torah Shebichsav is pretty clearly defined as scripture. Torah Shebaal Peh is the interpretation of Torah Shebichsav plus halacha in general, plus Agoda and Musar, if you want to call that. Sociology and history and realia in their own right are not Talmud Torah. They're very interesting, but they're not Talmud Torah.
But if one studies that,
so derech agav, you might learn a gemara if you're studying to write a paper on how the terminology, you know, of which generations quote which generation of the gemara. You're going to learn a lot of gemaras in the process. There's no doubt about that. On a personal level, one of the reasons I chose to do a PhD and in the end in academic in rabbinics and not in computer science was because I just think I would have the I did not think I'd have the koach to work in two completely different disciplines, you know, where there was really no overlap in the substance of them. Whereas when you write, when you work in rabbinics, you get to sit and read. You do get to learn a lot of the time in doing so. But the study per se itself, you know, when you sit down to actually work on the problem and you tabulate your data, when you make a table of yeish kedi and yeish kedi kani, yeish kedi lo kani, and all the possibilities, that's Talmud Torah. When you make up a table of the quotations of which Amara quotes the other, that's not Talmud Torah. It may be a very useful tool, just as science is very useful for understanding for paskani halacha, for understanding many things. Is it a kind of a mitzvah in its own right of whatever some general rubric? Sure, it's a machshir. But if you're talking about Talmud Torah itself, is the study of the Torah Shebichsav or Torah Shebaal Peh. So I think machshirim are very good as well. There's no question about that. I think studying knowledge for its own right is a wonderful thing. You know, that's what distinguishes man from animal. It's this broad thirst for, aside from speeches, it's a broad thirst for abstract knowledge. It's wonderful. But nonetheless, you know, there's Talmud Torah, and there is Chochmas HaOlam, which is wonderful, which is not Talmud Torah, and that's okay. It doesn't have to be Talmud Torah to be a worthwhile pursuit. But what we do in a Beis Medrash is Talmud Torah. Place. Are there any questions about that? Any other questions?
I was going to say, there's actually a day that Rabbi Lamb brings in his book Torah Umada that it would make a bracha on Machshir, but
you know, I happen to have a nice relationship with Dr. Lamb, and I wouldn't want to do what one of my no longer present colleagues did, who got up and, you know, made fun of the book and something like that. I think it was one of the things he picked on. I don't know what day that is. I think it's a silly day. I understand that. I think that part of the problem that disturbs me about that point of view is it makes an assumption that if it weren't Talmud Torah, then maybe we shouldn't be doing it. I know that may not be what the day says, but I think that there are, I don't think you make a bracha on your calculus or your physics, even though I think they are magnificent subjects. I don't mean to exclude history either. It's of a different nature. I'm belying my science and math roots here. I like things that tend more towards absolute truth than not, but, you know, I and postmodernists aside, But the fact is that I think they're incredibly valuable. I think the study of particularly the natural sciences for many people, maybe the humanities for others, can be incredibly religiously inspiring, spiritually inspiring, morally furthering, and they're wonderful enterprises. They're just not Talmud Torah. You know, I, for me personally, what I've chosen as my life's enterprise is Talmud Torah. But I think that there are many different Darchei HaChaim, and then even for the person whose primary occupation is Talmud Torah, there are other valuable subjects to study. But you don't have to call them Talmud Torah for them to be valuable. Chaim?
On a completely different note.
He wants to know about the Dagesh and Beged Kefas on Tuesdays. Yes.
According to Rashad, we'll talk about that later. But